Do you have an idea for a podcast, but you don't know where to start? Maybe you're overwhelmed by all the tech or you're convinced nobody will actually listen to you. Well, I'm Shauna Game. After 9.5 years as a professional podcaster, at this show, Everyone's Talking Money, and 25 million downloads later, let me tell you the secret to a profitable podcast. It is building a solid foundation, your podcast roadmap before you launch. That's why I created the Podcaster Class, a fast-paced group cohort podcasting for profit 8-week style MBA program. The Podcaster Class is immersive, comprehensive, and insanely motivational. If you want to create a podcast, DIYing a launch is just not the way to go. In the Podcaster Class, you'll get the tools, tips, and strategies to create a podcast that resonates with listeners and one you can be proud of. Get this, 90% of podcasters never make it to episode 3. That's 2.8 million podcasters who just quit. So to be a top podcaster, you only need to publish 21 episodes, but you got to make them good. So in the Podcaster Class, I'm taking the mystery out of how to create, launch, and profit from your podcast so you can create a top 1% podcast just like this one. The May cohort is now open for enrollment. Classes start May 22nd. There are only 15 spots open. You are going to learn podcasting with me and 14 other amazing people. You can learn all the details at thepodcasterclass.com. Use code podcast when you sign up for $100 off. That's thepodcasterclass.com. When it comes to financial advice, you got to trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. When I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. Before NerdWallet, I was paying for vacations all wrong. I was missing out on miles. I didn't even know I was leaving on the table. Now I've got a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? I don't know, maybe that fancy hotel upgrade that you have always been dreaming about. Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. No matter your gender, you most certainly know of or have worn a sports bra. On this episode, I have the most eye-opening, inspiring entrepreneur 101 crash course conversation with Lisa Linhall, the creator of the original, very first sports bra, and how she took an idea and turned it into an entire industry without even having a business background. If you have ever wanted to create something, this episode is going to inspire you to take that leap.
You're listening to Millennial Money with award-winning money expert and serial entrepreneur, Shauna Compton Game, where we flip the script on the old school approach to everything your parents never taught you about money. Each week, Shauna creates a safe space by talking with special guests from around the world about money wellness, entrepreneurship, traveling like a boss, and what makes millennials tick. Unique stories, trailblazing perspectives, tips, tricks, and everything there is to know about money. Find it all here as you uncover your money story and unlock the life you want to live. Pretty cool, right? Here's Shauna, money expert, Indiana Hoosier, and burger aficionado.
The experts say that the best way to start a thriving business is to solve a problem that you have. Then, of course, there are a million and one details that you have to consider. But this month, we're talking about a healthy money mindset and considering the power of what if. What if the idea you have for a problem you want to solve ends up changing culture and people's lives? It's pretty powerful. Lisa's story is one for the record books. How more people don't know about her really, truly baffles me. And I don't want to spoil her story, but Lisa loved to run. It was like her stress reliever, but she hated what happened to the girls, we'll call them, when she would run. So she thought there had to be a solution. And there wasn't. So she just created one. How crazy is that? And then she created an entire marketplace for sports bras as we know it. She profiles her story in her new book, Unleash the Girls, the untold story of the invention of the sports bra and how it changed the world and me. But I want you to hear the story from her. So let's dig in. Lisa, I am so excited to have you on the podcast. You are a legend, and I'm honored to have you here with us.
Well, thank you, Sean. I really appreciate it. I love being on your podcast. I think it's great. I really, Millennial Money. Wow. Tell me about it.
Well, we had just have got an amazing group of listeners, hundreds of thousands of listeners all around the world that have been following me for about 5 years now and listening to how I attempt to bring real life to money. You know, I think it's this thing that touches every single one of us and it touches every aspect of our lives. And so my goal is just
it
to help.
Certainly does.
Yeah. My goal is just to help break down that taboo topic and the stigma around money so that we can, you know, come to a place and have cool conversations about it.
Good for you. Yay. Yay. And a woman. Yay.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, talking about that, you and your business partner started the first sports bra, which I feel like I need to just like give you a virtual high five for doing in 77. And I mean, I can only imagine what the entrepreneurial climate for women was in the 70s. What was sort of your experience back then with entrepreneurship?
Oh, well, I was very scanty, to say the least. I really wasn't planning to go into business at all. I was working as a secretary to make money, and I had an art studio in my basement, and I had gone back to school because, like many women of my generation, I had interrupted my college education to get married and follow my husband to where he was going. And but in 76, I guess it was, I had gone back to school to finish my undergraduate degree and start on my graduate degree. And when I came up with the idea for a bra for when I was running, I thought it would be a nice little mail order business on the side to help me get through school.
Yeah.
But to go into business? I didn't think so.
Oh, wow. Well, were you an avid runner at the time? Is that kind of how you felt like, wait a minute, we need something more, a little bit more supportive here?
Oh, absolutely. At the time, I was running about 30 miles a week, which is about 5 or 6 miles a day. And the real irony is, oh, Aishana, I was not athletic as a kid. I wasn't one of those girls out in the field hockey, doing field hockey or on the tennis court or anything like that. I kind of shied away from organized sports and all that. But boy, when I discovered running, I loved it. I was not a competitive runner. For me, running was more of a spiritual practice, actually. It just connected me to beautiful outdoor spaces and to the natural world. And I loved it, except my breasts bounced and were uncomfortable.
Yes, I could see how that would be a problem. Well, I think what's so fascinating, I was telling my mom that I was doing this interview with you, and she said, well, you know, in the 60s and 70s, A, we weren't in this kind of like exercise climate that we're in now. She's like, I think, correct, you know, we didn't have everything automated. So we had to do the washing ourselves. We had to mow our lawns ourselves and do all these other things. So there wasn't maybe necessarily that need to be, you know, as exercise friendly as we are today. But she said, you know, that she absolutely remembered when the first sports bra came out, and she kept thinking, well, this is interesting. Like, why hasn't this come about, you know, why didn't somebody think about this already? So I think it's just fascinating that you know, came up with this idea. And then how did you then decide, like, okay, I have this idea. How in the world did you figure out, like, then how to get it made? And did you talk about it with, like, some of your girlfriends? Like, what was your process like?
Well, that's also ironic because, all right, so it started out as a joke, really, because my sister called me and said, she'd just begun running, and what did I do for a bra? And I told her I didn't know, and she said, well, why isn't there a jock strap for women? Ha, 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 you know, same idea, different part of the anatomy. And I said, yeah, that's not such a bad idea. But the irony is I don't sew. I took an eighth grade sewing class and I flunked. Well, I got a D. I mean, I really didn't do well. Yeah. But my friend Polly was in the same class and she did really, really well. And she happened that summer of 1977, she happened to be renting a room from me and my husband because she was the costume designer for the Champlain Shakespeare Festival because she was a costume designer.
Yeah.
So I went and knocked on her door upstairs and I said, Polly, help me. I want to build this bra. And she rolled her eyes.
Right.
But between the two of us, we crafted this very first sports bra. And actually, all right, the real truth is the working prototype, we had a hard time figuring out how to do a bra that was really supportive. And the working prototype, the one that finally worked, was two jock straps cut in half, sewed back together so that the pouches became cups.
No.
And the really, and the waistband became a rib band and the straps crossed on the back. Yes.
That's genius. It literally is a jock strap for the ladies.
That was the first jog bra. Well, actually, we started calling it jock bra, but then decided jog bra was better.
Yeah. So were you like testing all these prototypes? Would you go out for runs and?
Yep. And it wasn't until that one that it actually worked. And, you know, humor is so important, I got to tell you, because even that came into being because of a joke. My then husband had, we were having trouble and he literally came down the stairs with his jockstrap pulled over his head and said, ha, 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 look at this. And we thought that was so funny that I took it off him and pulled it on over my head. And when the cup went over my breast, I went, oh, you know what? Anyway. It's a true story.
That is, well, they say that, right? I mean, what makes a good like entrepreneur is looking in your own life at the problems you have and then creating a solution around that. So, I mean, who better to do
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That is true. You know, one of the things I always tell people when they're asking about starting businesses and such, I say, look, if you're going into business because you want to make money, if you want to be an entrepreneur to make money, that is not the right reason to do it at all. If it's because it's a problem that you've spotted and you have a solution, great. But if you just want to make money, don't do it for that reason.
Right. And is that just because you really want to have the passion behind it? You want to be able to do the long haul of whatever winding road the product takes or the service business takes?
Absolutely. I mean, because, you know, you have to wear so many hats and not all of them are fun. And, you know, you have to be in the nitty gritty in the kitchen, washing the dishes, as well as then be the visionary who's dealing with complex, far-flung plans and ideas, as well as then, and in our case, being in the packing and shipping room and shipping out bras, you know, packaging yeah. them and shipping them. It really runs the gamut and you have to be passionate about what you're doing. I mean, in my case, I had no idea. I mean, for me, I was just solving my own problem. And I thought, well, gee, if I have this problem, I bet other women do too. And maybe a nice little mail order business on the side. I had no idea. The orders came in like crazy. I had to quit school.
Wow.
In order, you know, I went to my advisor and said, what do I do? You know, this is just taking off. And he looked at me and he said, Lisa, you can always come back to school.
Yes.
But you should see where this business is going, you know, see what happens. And, you know, was 30 years before I went back to graduate school.
Wow. So was it literally just like one woman told another woman, told another woman, and then it just sort of expanded that way? Or did you guys, were you in stores? Did you put out a catalog? Like how did you have that expansion happen?
Well, it was not just word of mouth. It we were like sponges. I got to tell you, we learned a lot very quickly. My favorite, I knew nothing about, well, let me back up and say, I was very clear from the beginning that the jog bra was not lingerie.
Right.
It was sports equipment. It was athletic equipment. And so therefore, and also I knew that department stores and selling and buying there was a crazy age old business. We were newcomer. Nobody was going to give us the time of day. But in sporting goods stores, they were smaller. At the time, they were often guys who were runners or jocks or old football players. That, you know, they were participants. We could talk to them. And that was instinct. Then it was just a matter of asking questions of everybody. It is amazing how wonderful people are and how much they really do want to help. You just have to ask the question. And we did, boy. I will never forget. One of my favorite stories is we put this little tiny ad in Running Times magazine and said, you know, jog bra, the bra for running. And it had my personal address and phone number in it. And we had no idea. And it even said dealer inquiries invited. And I didn't even know what a dealer was. some store had told my partner to put that in. And I said, is that the same as a retailer?
Right.
we really didn't know. And, but anyway, so I came in from a run one day and my phone was ringing. This is my own phone. And this was back before cell phones, by the way. And so I answered it and it was this gentleman from somewhere in the South. And he said, I saw your ad and are y'all looking for sales reps? And I went, what's a rep?
Right.
And there's this long pause on the other end of the phone. And he says, you new to the sporting goods business? And I said, yeah. And he goes, you have a minute? And I went, yeah. And that lovely gentleman spent an hour and a half on the phone with me explaining the sporting goods business and sales representation and what they did for us and what we needed to do for them and how you sell into stores and commission rates and samples.
Wow.
I mean, he was wonderful. And at the end of that phone call, I hired him. I remember saying, you mean I send you samples for free? And again, he paused me and went, yeah. I got to show him something. I went, oh, yeah, I guess so.
I'm sorry, but I have the best dog ever. Her name is Winnie Stardust. She is a mini golden Mountain Doodle full of life, and I would do just about anything to keep her happy, healthy, and safe. Today's episode is sponsored by the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program. Your pet is part of your family, and you want to do the best for them. But vet bills can really add up. We jokingly keep telling Winnie she needs to get a job to pay for her vet bill. That's why you should check out pet insurance. And with ASPCA Pet Health Insurance, you can focus on the care your pet deserves and cover what matters most. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customized accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping to ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are. Because vet bills can really add up, especially when you are least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim, and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/etm. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/etm. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/etm. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independent American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer, is not engaged in the business of insurance. The weather is getting warmer. I'm so excited, and it is time to say goodbye to all those jackets and sweaters and hello to the shorts and t-shirts. I wanted to update my summer workout wardrobe for the long haul without, you know, spending a fortune. Luckily, I found Quince and I am in love. Quince is your go-to place from everything from premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts from $30, washable silk tops, timeless, 14-karat gold jewelry, and so much more. The best part of all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes those savings on to you. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. Okay, I bought the dreamiest pair of workout leggings and a bright pink workout top to match. Honestly, ladies, I gotta tell you, these leggings you need. The price cannot be beat, and I feel like a million bucks wearing this cozy workout-friendly outfit. I've worn it for like 5 days straight. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/etm for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/etm to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/etm. I'm going to be real with you. Identity theft is on the rise, and you do not want to wake up one morning and discover that your bank account has been emptied, or you're overdue on credit cards you never even applied for. We talk about this often on the podcast, but you don't realize how much of your information is available to scammers on the internet and how susceptible you and your family are to identity theft and fraud. I know, it's scary, but now you can get your data removed with Delete Me. That's why I personally choose Delete Me. Delete Me is a subscription service that removes your personal information from the largest people search databases on the web, and in the process, helps prevent potential ID theft, doxing, and phishing scams. I just started using Delete Me, and I got my regular personalized privacy report. I was shocked what they found and removed. It was pages of information about me that I did not want online. Here's how it works. You sign up and provide Delete Me with exactly what information you want deleted, and their experts take it from there. I cannot tell you how relieved I felt to have Delete Me. And you know, it's also a great service for your parents or grandparents to help protect them from identity theft. Delete Me is not just a one-time service. Delete Me is always working for you, constantly monitoring and removing the personal information you do not want on the internet. Take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me, now at a special price for my listeners. Today, get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/etm and use promo code ETM at checkout. The only way you get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/etm and enter code ETM at checkout. joindeleteme.com/etm. Go to joindeleteme.com/etm and use code ETM for 20% off. In those moments when money is just not moving as fast as your dreams, Earnin provides the financial momentum you need to keep moving forward. Earnin is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. You just download the Earnin app and verify your paycheck. Then you access up to $100 a day as you work, and you can leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. I honestly would use Earnin in lots of different ways, but what's on my mind recently is I need a night out. I need some good tacos to sip on a few virgin margaritas and celebrate you all helping this podcast earn 26 million downloads. Make Earnin a part of your financial routine and join Earnin's over 3.5 million customers who say things like, "When I think about Earnin, I think about financial stability and security. Gives me a lot of peace of mind." Download Earnin today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin app, type in "Talkin' Money" under podcast when you sign up. It will really help the show. Talkin' Money under podcast. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank, subject to your available earnings, daily max, pay period max, and location. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank & Trust, member FDIC.
It's Tuesday, and we have another Ask Shauna. This is one from Ben. Ben says, "Hi, Shauna. I'm a fan of the podcast. Thanks for all that you do. I recently accepted a new job, which I start next week. My new employer will allow me to join their 401k plan after a year with the company. I'm wondering what I should do with my current 401k. One of my goals for the year is to be debt-free. I'm considering potentially extracting and using some of my existing 401k funds to pay off my credit card debt and student loans. I also have a Roth IRA, so I'm thinking about adding the max amount this year to that account with the funds as well. I know that this will incur taxes, but I'm really wanting to wipe away my debt. I realize the standard option would be to leave the 401k as is until next year, when I could add to it with my new account. Is it okay to consider using some of my 401k to take care of the debt?" Ben, thanks so much for being a listener. This is a great question, and I'm going to run off a list of cons for taking money out of your 401k, your IRA, etc., before age 59 and a half. But at the end of the day, there are also a few pros potentially that I want you to think about. So the cons. You'll have a 10% penalty on the funds you take out, plus you're going to pay taxes based off your tax rate. So let's give an easy example. Let's say you make $70,000 a year and you took out $20,000 from your retirement account. You'd be taxed on $90,000 that year, which may not sound that bad, except it could put you in a higher tax bracket and then result in a higher tax bill. So something you definitely want to think about, talk to an accountant or CPA with your specific numbers so you know how that will directly impact you. So while you'll be paying off your debt, which is obviously a pro, and you'll be knocking out whatever that interest rate is, on the flip side, you may have to just plan a little bit for a tax bill. Plus, of course, it also means that you're going to lower your retirement fund balance and any potential growth. So those are the negatives. Now, with that said, this is where it comes down to the, I call it, quote unquote, how I sleep at night factor. If you understand the negatives, but you really, 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 I don't know how many reallys I'm going to have to do here, but let's just say like 50 reallys, hate your debt to the point that it keeps you from sleeping soundly. You wake up in the morning like a cold sweat. I hate debt. I hate this. I hate paying it every month. It makes me stressed out. I'm afraid, whatever those words are for you. Then you have something to consider. And this is where the gray area really comes in, because if we look at the cons, if we look at the math around taking money out of your retirement account, it doesn't bode really well. But this whole month, we're talking about the emotional side of money. And I talk about this all the time on the show because I think it's really important and we overlook the emotional side of money. If you go to a financial planner, they're going to look you in the face and probably tell you, don't take money out because it doesn't mathematically make sense. But the emotional side of money says, okay, but we also have to consider at what cost. So just like in your retirement accounts, when you're deciding what to invest in, you're looking at your risk tolerance, like how risky you want to be, how much risk are you willing to take on for a potential return? The same thing can kind of be said in situations like this, weighing out the pros and cons. If the con is so negative to you of having this debt that, like I said, it's holding you back, it's keeping you up at night, it's making you panic and filled with anxiety, whatever it is for you, if that is so unbearable to you, then it's worth considering maybe the cons are not as bad as they are in your situation. So it really is going to come down to thinking about those two different dynamics, how they weigh for you in your situation. I will say, before you decide to take money out of your retirement account, I would look at every other option first. And maybe you have, but can you find extra cash in your bank account each month that you can put towards the debt payoff? Are you actually in your numbers every month, looking at where your money's being spent? Can you get a low interest loan, maybe from parents or a relative, something where you can pay off that debt? You can still pay back your family or relatives, whoever it may be, but it's a much lower interest rate. Can you refinance your student loans to a lower interest rate? Does that make a difference? can you get your credit cards on, say, a 0% interest card for 15 months, 18 months, however many months you can get, and then rapidly pay them off? So those are just a couple of alternatives. Maybe you might be able to come in, up with a few more. Maybe that jogged your mind. But look at all the alternatives first and weigh those out. Are any of those practical, or any of those options, do they actually work in your situation? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know the answer to that. If you do decide to go ahead with this, you'd have to withhold taxes if you took money out of your 401k. So most people don't like to do that. Instead, what most people elect is to do something called a trustee-to-trustee transfer to an IRA. So rolling your 401k money directly into a new IRA that you set up, where you can opt not to have taxes withheld and then pay up later. Or if you can put the money back within 60 days, you avoid some of those cons associated with this process. So, Ben, there's a lot of things to consider, because taking money out of your retirement account does have some hefty downsides. But also, don't discount the emotional side. And really spend some time thinking about that, really, because a lot of this process you can't undo once you've done it. So really look at things, write them out on a piece of paper, think about your situation, and then with some confidence, make your decision. So I hope that at least helped you point in the right direction. If you're listening, you haven't asked Shauna, what are you waiting for? Head on over to the link in the show notes or over to our podcast hub at mmoneypodcast.com. Right on the homepage, you'll find the Ask Shauna section. Fill it out, and I am so excited to answer your question. So it was almost probably like better you didn't know all of these aspects going into it. You just were like, I have this great product, and maybe almost like some sort of ignorance in it was the beauty of it as well.
Oh, absolutely, because it turned out that it was the right product at the right time. But also, if I had been in business school or something, if I had done market research about this idea I had, I would probably never have gone into business, because market research would have shown me that bra sales had been in decline for over a decade. Mm. That, in fact, in the 70s, let us remember what the 70s were like. Women had been burning their bras, if not literally, certainly metaphorically.
Yes.
I mean, it was the second wave of women's lib, and, you know, our hair was getting longer and our skirts were getting shorter, and we were, you know, not about... I was of the generation where my mother was trying to get my 13-year-old self to wear girdles and stockings, you know, and my 17-year-old self was wearing mini skirts and tights, and, you know, we were not, things were really changing. And yeah. If I had done market research, I would have said, oh no, this is not an economy or a market for bras. Oh no, no. Well, in fact, the sports bra totally changed the yeah. bra market, if you will. All these traditional bra makers went and made sports bras and increased their sales dramatically. And now, what is it, over 45 years later, now the sports bra is credited with giving birth to athleisure.
Totally. I mean, yeah, I mean, talk about being a trailblazer for women's health and just a whole other outlet for women to go out and exercise, and let alone just, I mean, women just now wear sports bras around just cause.
It's,
I mean,
true.
Sometimes
true.
I just put one on cause it just feels good.
Well, I do have to say that one of the outcomes that I really had not expected to see was, you know, again, I was just doing to solve my own problem, but in fact, it was a problem that was so much larger. I'm sure you're aware, in 1972, Title IX was passed, which said yes. that any federally funded program, athletic program, there had to be equal money for women and girls as there was for the guys. And that was great. But what it didn't address was the pain and discomfort that women were experiencing in trying to be athletic around their breast movement. And so while Title IX did half of the job, until the sports bra appeared in 1977, women's self-consciousness, their discomfort, those concerns were not addressed. And their actual figures, I mean, that show that the increase in women and girls' athletic participation, and I'm not just talking about organized sports, but just being out there in the street and on the field since the advent of the sports bra. It shocks me.
Well, I'm curious, like, what would you say to other women entrepreneurs? You talked about if you would have done the market research, maybe you would have been like, I am not creating this thing at all. Like, what advice would you give to somebody who, or how maybe to balance what the market is saying versus their intuition or maybe their own needs for creating a product?
I would say to trust your instinct, to trust your gut, always. The market research is one thing, but especially one's instincts are important. And also look at your own track record. If you are a person who is a problem citer and solver, and have always been in your jobs, the one that says, hey, you know, we should move that filing cabinet over there. It would make the flow much better. Da, 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 da. Then trust your gut. You know, you're made that way. Trust yourself. And the other thing that I really feel is so important is that, you know, being in business, being in commerce, it's all about relationships. It is so much about relationships.
Yes.
Between you and your customers, the customer and the product, the vendors, it's all about relationship. And relationships are strengthened and built on trust. And what is trust? Trust is delivering on any promises you make. And by the way, and this is so important for entrepreneurs, those promises begin between you and you.
Yeah.
You know, why are you right? Why are you going into business? What's your purpose? What are other outcomes that might happen from this decision? You know, what promises are you making to yourself and to others? You know, these are really the basics, the real underpinnings of the structure of our lives and of our businesses.
Yeah, that's such great advice. Wow. Do you feel like the entrepreneurial climate for women has changed a lot since the 70s when you started? Or do you see patterns where maybe we're still kind of stuck in some of those trends?
Well, you know, actually, I have two things to say about that. One, in answer to your question, yes, things have changed since the 70s. Absolutely. And for the better. And the second thing I need to say is, I wish we didn't have to talk about women entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. I wish we didn't have to make the distinction, because we are all humans, know, and it is really where we are today is that we are talking about gender equality, and that is so important. And to even talk about women entrepreneurs, I wish we were talking about what qualities does this human being bring to the table? And too often we deal in stereotypes. And really, when we're talking about gender differences, we're talking in stereotypes. Women are better at relationships. Men are more competitive. You know, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, that is so, you know, it might generally be true, but it's not necessarily true. You got to look at who is that person. And, you know, and that's what my experience has taught me. Oh, by the way, So that's what I have to say about that.
Yeah, no, that's great advice. And I'm absolutely with you on that. I mean, I wish that we didn't have to segment and separate and put people in boxes like we do. And we could all just come at things as humans, that when sometimes we have a strength in this and a weakness in that. And that's what makes us all, perfect. Yeah. Well, I'm curious, like, so, You got this sales rep, you started having the gangbuster sales, and other bra manufacturers started to implement a version of the sports bra. Where did the story go from there?
Well, my story, we grew the business. It grew really rapidly. I mean, our average growth rate was 25% per year.
Wow.
And yeah, it was unbelievable. And one of the things that I always say, is you cannot grow a business unless you are willing to grow with it personally. You know, because all growth is change. And so in order to be responsive to that change, what happens is you as a person, you've got to change. And that's what happened to me and my partner. I mean, luckily we were in an era, the late 70s and the 1980s, when personal growth was also an industry. there were all kinds of, what is the buzzword for it? Personal growth seminars, gurus, and what was it, Tony Robbins and Deepak Chopra, and well, of course, I'm still a fan of his, but all kinds of that stuff going on, and we took advantage of it, and we brought it in-house, but we had to, because we could not have done this without our own growth happening at the same time. And you know who else talks about that is the guy that started Whole Foods.
Yes.
And I quote him in my book. I just recently published a book about, called Unleash the Girl, which is the story of inventing the sports bra and the wild ride that it was. And I quote him because he talks about how the business would get stuck at times because he was stuck. So that's a really important element. And so as the business grew so rapidly, we had to grow with it and change. And there came a point when, and we were always able to, you will appreciate this, finance it from within.
Very finance important, this growth. Yes.
And then we couldn't anymore because 25% of $10,000 is a lot different than 25% of $10 million.
Yes.
So we were, and this was way before IPOs were, you know, like the
thing to do. Yeah.
Lunch. Right. So we were going to have to go and get serious bank financing and yada, yada, yada to keep on growing and going. And I knew that I really didn't want to do that.
Wow.
And at the same time, my phone rang one day, and it was someone fishing to see if we were interested in selling the business. And I think it was 18 months. I don't know. Don't quote me on that. But we ended up selling the business.
Wow.
And the growth was part, you know, financing that growth was part of it.
Sure, sure.
So in 1990, we sold the business and I stuck it out. You know, I had, contract to see the transition through and all, but by 1992 I was gone. I was back in the art studio.
Wow. What a story. I mean, that's just, it's just so fascinating and encouraging. I've been an entrepreneur my entire career, so I know what it's like to do 50 million jobs and to, have a vision for something. And it's always like so inspiring to talk to other people who've done the same thing and have done it with such success. Do you still wear sports bras?
Oh, well, I do, except I will say one of the holes in the sports bra universe is for larger-breasted women. Oh. There still is not a really good functional
maybe
sports
that's,
bra for larger-breasted
that's
women.
2.0.
Well, no, I did. I did start another business, but that was for a medical a bra. It's not, well, it's called the Compressor Comfort Bra. But it's actually a medical device for breast cancer survivors develop something called lymphedema.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that was a really interesting discovery too, learning and discovery. And it's now distributed by Jobst, who are the premier compression company. Yeah, I'm getting all my plugs in.
Yeah, my gosh. Well, I mean, it just how you've been able to take the initial idea you had and recreate it in different ways with the knowledge you have, I think is really inspiring. I'd love for if somebody's listening and they're trying to figure out, maybe they have this big idea and they're trying to figure out how to bring it to life. What would you tell them to focus on? Maybe something they could do immediately, something they could do today.
Write about it. Well, everybody's different. Everyone is different. But for me, it was to sit down. One of the most valuable things I did, and everybody's going to groan, but one of the most valuable things I did was sit down and write down a vision. What do you call it? A vision statement. If you're more visual, do a vision board. Or write. When the Small Business Administration made me write a business plan, it was the best thing I ever did. And at the time, I called it financial fairy tales because I didn't know how many bras I was going to sell in the next year. I had no idea. But I had to think it all through. I had to envision it. And it was so powerful and so helpful. So that maybe actually all that would be the second thing, because the first thing I would do is take myself seriously.
That's such a good suggestion. And I think so many of us just, we discount ourselves. Oh, I can't do that. Or that's not a good idea. Or I surely can't, you know, have enough money to get it off the ground. What, fill in the blank, whatever it is. I think that's such powerful advice.
And the other thing I say is, you know, there are a million naysayers out there. Oh, somebody else has done that. Oh, you can't hear. We're going to get a million naysayers, and you just cannot listen to them. You cannot. You can have a file that you put all those cautions into, because they're cautions. But you're never going to end up in the Olympics if somebody tells you not to stand up. Not to take that first step. I know that sounds trite, but it's so true.
I loved Elise's lessons on money. As she said in the interview, don't start a business for money. Start it because you are curious. I think curiosity is this great ingredient when you're an entrepreneur. So I want to ask you, what are you curious about? What is that idea that you've had that you've been too afraid to start? What if you started and changed the world? It could happen. I'm sure Lisa never imagined that one of her original jog bras would hang in the Smithsonian, but it does. So go after that thing you want to do. Do it scared with your knees knocking. God knows I have done that so many times. Thanks so much for checking out this episode. We are all about community here on the podcast. So if you know someone that is ready to change their life and change their relationship around money, share this episode with them. Let's invite everyone into this place where talking about money is approachable, relatable, and dare I even say, a little bit fun.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Millennial Money. For all the behind the scenes on today's episode, make sure to check out the show notes. You can find all our episodes at mmoneypodcast.com. If you love this episode, share it with your friends and leave us a review wherever you listen to this podcast. See you back here in a few days with a fresh new episode.
Everyone knows that putting money aside in savings is really important. But then what? Should you keep your savings locked in a CD for a higher rate or keep them liquid in a money market? Can your checking account help you save too? Or is it about creating the right combination? We believe real banking is a conversation. Let's talk about the savings options that are right for you. Learn more at sandyspringbank.com. Member FDIC.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See what makes Minnesota the star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.